As you're turning to chapter, your Perekei Bet, chapter 12 in Bamidbar, we're dealing a very, very actually small section. I don't know if you did anybody read the emails that I sent out that we're doing?
Or
you did?
Miriam?
Yeah, we're doing about Miriam, right? Miriam and Lashon Hara. A very small section, but Bahalotcha is really like chock full of material. It's just, there's so much to talk about. It's almost a little frustrating because, you know, you wish you could take some of the material in Bahalotcha and put it in Vayakel Pekudei or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, instead of the counting of Bamidbar, can't we, you know, just spread it around? I always have that feeling when we get to Bereishit, you know, like Simchat Torah is on a Thursday, and they read the Parsha on Shabbos, and it's done. And Bereishit is just, you know, people spend years studying the Parsha of Bereishit. But I digress. So we're going to talk about a lot of different things, and so I hope it's not too scattered. But one of the things I want to talk about, there's a pasuk that talks about this notion of Ha'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od. We all know that Moshe was anav, wasn't anav. So we're going to talk about what the word anav means. But at face value, what is an anav?
Humble.
Humble, right. So what does it mean to be humble? What is the definition of humility?
No ego. Modest.
No ego, modest, yeah.
Willing to put others' needs important.
Put other needs ahead of yourself.
Or other people's feelings, like, itchashev.
To consider other people important. Okay, so it's interesting to me because
I guess it's that you don't think that you've done, and especially any gift you have is from Hashem. It's nothing.
Right. It says at the end that Moshe was anav. At the end of Devarim, right? It says, Lo kam ki Moshe. Moshe was like the greatest navi ever. And then at the end, it's right before the very, very end when he dies. One second. Okay. Right, it says Lo kam navi od ki Moshe. So I guess over here it says that he was the most humble man. We'll see, you know, what his humility entailed. What I'm also interested in is that just this notion of humility is a trait that's very much lost on us today. I feel it very much personally that we live in a society where if you don't have notoriety, then you're not a person. You're not considered significant. And I think that me.
Society, like, in general, or in the Jewish community of Yad Binyamin?
Well, forget, I'm not talking about Yad Binyamin per se, necessarily. But the Jewish community, without a doubt, is definitely true. I just give an example. We're trying to do a Yom Iyun, where I work at Orot. We said, what will bring people out? Well, we want the girls to come. You know what I'm saying? It's on their vacation, so what do you need?
A big name.
The quality of the shiur, I mean, we have incredible teachers and whatever, but the idea that it's going to be an incredible shiur is not enough. It has to be somebody who people have heard of.
There'll be somebody to bring them to.
Right. It's got to be somebody famous, pretty much. Somebody well known.
Hey, but Moshe, look, Moshe, he was pretty well known.
He was pretty famous, yes. Moshe would give a shiur.
Hey, would give a shiur, we would
come. We don't understand a word of it, but okay.
You understand what I mean? Like,
yes, I do, but just, it's so interesting, because I was at this conference, and the teacher was talking about, he was actually a discussion of the internet and whatever, and he was talking about just some of the values of the internet are just the opposite of what Jewish education tries to teach, that one, like an ideal Jewish educator is someone who's an anav, someone who's humble, who has this, you know, doesn't really care if people are aware or not aware of, you know what I'm saying, of what he does necessarily. You know, it's not a question of notoriety as much as a question of, am I teaching, am I educating? And, you know, how everything we do, like, you know, we and I were just talking about Facebook, and it's great, you know, you could talk to your friends or whatever, but it's this notion of broadcasting to the world what I'm eating for dinner now, you know, or broadcasting I went to this restaurant, or, you know, and we live in this society where if I don't broadcast, if I don't have followers, if I don't have friends, well, I got that, okay, if you don't have your own
blog. I have a Facebook, he has the blog.
Right. But at least the blog, I think, is something significant, something like substantial.
You don't blog things that you're doing. You don't say today I went to the supermarket.
Who cares?
Things you're thinking about.
Right. I don't know if anybody cares about that either. But it becomes a sort of self-worth of, you know, who knows about me and who's aware of me. And it's so interesting that Moshe, who's like the most famous person in the history of Judaism, and we'll see more about him, was anav ma'od mikol adam. He was so humble that he was the person who cared the least. He wasn't into himself, about himself. And I think that this attribute of anava is something that is just, we don't talk about it. And it's elusive, and I think it's lost upon us today, mostly because we're so impressed upon by the society of celebrity, that even if we're not celebrities, and even if we know that it really is ridiculous and celebrity is useless and all that, the culture of celebrity still influences us. And we want to go to the shiur of the rav who gets a zillion people, and not the rav who gets, five people on a...
Six people
on a Wednesday morning. You know what I'm saying? That it's sort of like, how many people, I have a person who I talk to often, and when I say, oh, I give a shiur on that, the first question they ask me is, oh, how many people came? Mm-hmm. I hate that question. It's like the worst question in the world, because it has no real bearing on how well the shiur went, and whether it was good, whether it was not. You know what I'm saying? It's really, but that's how people judge. Like, when they ask you, when you say you're a rabbi, oh, I'm a rabbi of a shul, I was a rabbi of a shul, what's the first question they ask you?
How many numbers?
Right, because that's a judge of what kind of... what they're really asking is, oh yeah? Tell me, were you a good rabbi? What kind of rabbi were you? So they don't ask you, what was your rabbinate about and what did you focus on? How many members did you have? Because if you had 30 members in your shul and it was a shtibel, nishkefela, right? But 210 families, and oh really? Oh, very nice. Yeah, okay. You know what I'm saying? It's just an interesting phenomenon to be aware of.
South Africa, that would be nothing also.
Really?
That's in South Africa. The shows look very large in South Africa.
Not anymore. It used to be that way.
They were. They were like these.
There used to be huge shows. Each area had a huge show, but now the trend today is to...
Mini boutique shows.
Shibos. Yeah.
Welcome. Yeah, that's the world.
How many families are she
there? Count up at the seats.
That's not so good. Okay. So now I wanted to point that out because it was on my mind, and I think it's something to focus, something to think about that we're all sort of susceptible to. These psukim are just chock loaded with stuff. Vatadaber Miriam v'Aharon b'Moshe. Oh, I'm sorry, Pasuk Aleph in Perek Yud Bet. There's a chumash here if you want.
That's okay.
No, yeah, you know better. Vatadaber Miriam v'Aharon b'Moshe al odot ha'isha hakushit asher lakach. Ki isha kushit lakach. Let's just translate it. Miriam and Aaron spoke. That's not even a good translation. On Moshe. Al odot, with regard to the Cushite woman that he married, for he married a Cushite woman. Okay. I have at least like 5 questions on this pasuk, but see if you could find something, some obvious ones.
Say regarding the Cushite woman he had married, or he had married her.
Correct. What about the repetition? Why does it repeat about the Cushite woman that he had married regarding the Cushite woman that he had married? You know what I'm saying? We got it. She's a Cushite woman. Ask me a better question.
She's an Isha. Well, obviously.
Married a Cushite woman.
Why? Well, even before you get to that.
Why now?
Well, excellent. Why now? What's going on? All of a sudden that we see that there's this... What did she do? Ask a better question. We're going to get to that. You'd be surprised. We're going to get to that in a second. Okay? Well, even before that, ask a more fundamental question.
Who is she?
It doesn't give her a name.
What's that?
Why doesn't it just say it's Tzipora?
Yeah. All right, what are you assuming?
Tzipora's a Midjani.
Right. Who is this Cushite woman? Who is this Cushite woman?
She's a Midjanite.
Yes, came from Midian.
She wasn't Cushite.
Right. What does Cushite mean?
Midian is...
Well, it's a derogatory term for...
What?
It's a derogatory term.
Is it derogatory?
Now it is.
Now it is, definitely. Today it's like saying nigger.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, I think
that
so.
Bad?
Yeah,
yes.
You know.
Sorry.
We use it as an offense, but I think it's
thin. How do you say it? How would you describe a person if you met? You say, I met an Ethiopian? Ethiopian?
You wouldn't say Ethiopian.
Yeah. It's like African American.
Yeah. No, you could say black in America. You could say a black
now
person.
You say black.
So what do you say in Hebrew?
Not politically correct.
Black.
Yeah.
What?
Ethiopian.
Ethiopian. You can't say, you can't describe their skin color.
In England,
I mean, not that I do, but
no,
this is good education for me. Don't worry, I won't, okay?
Kush is the name for Ethiopia.
Right, Kush is the name for Ethiopia. Right? So it's so interesting.
It's incorrect.
Correct.
It's
what?
In South Africa, you have to be very politically
What do you say? What do you have to say?
I'm saying.
Right, you don't know what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say. Right. Okay. So it's so who is this Cushy woman? Okay, what's the obvious understanding that we that Rashi tells us based on the Midrash? Look at Rashi, Haisha Kushit. Okay. Rashi says, Magisha ko modim biyafya. It tells us that everyone agreed, everyone admitted to her yafya, her beauty. We're in Perek Yud Bet in Bamidbar. Okay, everyone loved her beauty. Shneamar, as it says, Shakom modim biyafya, one second. Kishem shakom modim bishichuto shel kushi. Just as everyone understands the shichuto, the blackness of a black person.
I feel like this Rashi is like he's being politically correct for the 20th century.
Really? Right.
Like what does the word kushi have to do with beauty?
Next Rashi, kushit. Next Rashi, kushit. Begematria, yifat mar'eh. All right, work it out. Do the math. Kushi and gematria is yifat mar'eh. So what does Rashi tell us kushi means?
Beautiful.
Beautiful. And you know the term black is beautiful? Black is beautiful.
Yeah.
Right. That actually came from Rashi. You didn't know that? Right. All right. You didn't know that was in Chumash?
Right, right.
Okay, so but what does it mean? Literally, kushit, it means Eretz Kush, a black woman. So who in the world did Moshe marry? What black woman did Moshe marry?
When was he there?
Well, we'll get to that in a second. Okay, so if you look at the Midrashim that Rashi is based upon, the Midrash says the following. The kushit haita, and the Midrash assumes, exactly like you assumed, that it was Sipora. V'halo Midyanit haita. She's a Midyanit. So, in order to really understand Rashi, you have to know the Midrashim that are the background. Someone who's black, right, is recognized. Their skin color makes them more recognizable than the rest of us. So, Tzipora was recognizable. She stood out from all the other women. By the way, why would Tzipora stand out?
She's green.
That's Esther.
Esther.
Yeah. Why would
Tzipora?
She was gorgeous. Okay. Yeah. Very nice. That's what she said. Why would she stand out just practically?
Because she's a Midianite.
Right. Right. Ostensibly, she's from Midian, and she looks a little different than everyone else.
You would think Moshe wouldn't want someone looking if he's so anav. He wouldn't want a wife that stands out.
If he's really anav, he wouldn't care.
He wouldn't know.
Yeah. What? You wouldn't notice?
Yeah, he might notice, he just wouldn't care. Oh, Moshe, your wife is so... She stands out. Really? All right, whatever. I didn't notice. I mean, he would know her beauty, but he wouldn't stand on ceremony about it. You know what I'm saying? He wouldn't make an issue of it. He wouldn't...
Maybe she was beautiful because she was Moshe's wife. Meaning, you know,
ooh.
Like, you, no, like, you know,
I never thought about that.
No, yeah. Like, sometimes you see this, like, in the news, like, people make a huge deal about something just because... of their title as opposed to anything else.
Right.
You know, so maybe it's
just... Oh, you mean that people say, oh, that's Moshe's wife.
Right. It was sort of a... Like a
trendsetter.
It was like, ooh, like, you know...
Well, Rashi says it's not true. Rashi says she was beautiful.
Her conduct also was impeccable.
Her conduct was impeccable. Okay.
Midrash says, right,
Rabbi Yossi says, look at this. Yesh lecha isha, shehina'er b'yalduta, k'shimazkenet imenavelet. There are some women, you know, they're really beautiful when they're young, but, you know, age doesn't really do them well. He says, but, how do you know, Tzipor was na'eh b'yalduta v'na'eh b'ziknuta. She was gorgeous when she was young. Oh, I read Midrash. I love Midrash. Okay? Yeah, you don't have that, okay? So, two says, he took this Cushite woman. Okay, so the Midrash says, one second, another reason, it says, v'chi Cushit shema, was she Cushit? Tziporit was her name, Tzipora. And the Midrash says, V'hatzchi Tzipora Shema, was Tzipora her real name? Penina was her name. Anybody know that? That Penina was really her real name? Nobody heard that? Now another one. So why was she called Tzipora? V'fi Sheratza Achar Moshe K'tzipor. She ran after Moshe like a bird. I don't know what to do with that, but just, you know, throw that one out there.
No, there's another Midrash in Yalkut Shimoni that describes her pursuit of Moshe.
Well, that's the one they fed him.
Right.
That she fed him? No, that...
She gave him food.
Well, only because her father said, what? A young man came and saved you at the well and you didn't bring him home?
No.
Are you nuts?
No, he was in jail.
She was the one who gave him food for those 10 years.
Oh, one second. Who is this Isha Lukit? So that one opinion, the classic opinion, the Midrashic opinion, is that this Isha Kushit is Tzipora. There's a problem with this. What's the problem with it? What's the real problem, the fundamental problem with it?
She was pushing.
Oh, well, that's a nice problem. Right? What's the second problem? The bigger problem for me. If you say, what's the problem with saying that this woman is Tzipora?
What does
Why
mean?
Doesn't it
mean her? Yeah, Tzipora. Right. Vayitzaber, Miriam, Moshe, Alodot, Tzipora. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, speak about her. I mean, why say some Kushite woman, Ki Isha Kushit Laka? What does it sound like? What? Yeah, he married another woman. Now, don't think of it that way. I mean, he married another woman. He had another wife. Now, why don't we know about her? Right. She didn't have any significance in the context of the story. What do we learn about
this story?
Well, what do we learn about Tzipora? Interesting. What do we learn about Tzipora in the Chumash during the desert? What do we know about Tzipora in the desert?
Nothing.
Right? The Torah isn't U.S. Weekly. It's not interested in Moshe's personal life for whatever that's worth. Which is a very, very, again, interesting commentary. Oh, he married it. How come we never heard this? I never knew he married a Cushy woman. You know? Exactly, like the announcement, and then, you know, what did...
Their press advisors.
Moshe's Shever Brachas, you know what I'm saying? And the pictures from the Shever Brachas, and well, the menu, and the gifts, and the, you know what I'm saying? It's just so foreign to us that there would be this whole other part of Moshe that we just never know about. Like, how many wives is Moshe married to?
We only know of one, other than this.
Maybe two. Maybe more.
Same thing happened with Avram. Like we read Midrashim about other wives, some other kids, and like some people say this one is this one, this one is this one, but like...
Well, we don't know how many wives he had. Right, because it's not relevant. It's not really...
And
kids. But he had many children that we don't really know about. You know, and he sent them away, and it was only Yitzchak. That's
okay,
correct.
Here's the question. If the whole thing about Moshe was that once they gone into the desert, he according to Rashi and stuff, he kind of divorced Tzipora.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he take another wife?
When did he? Says the Rashbam. Rashbam, you just know. So now, Rashi is always based on Midrash. It's good to know. The Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, are what we call Pashtanim. And they're much more interested in the simple understanding of the text. So in the simple understanding of the text here, there's no Tzipora. And if the Torah wanted to say Tzipora, it would say Tzipora. And it said Isha Kushit. So what must he have done? Those of you who have Rashbam, Rashbam says, Ki dichti b'divrei hayamim. If you look at Divrei Hayamim, it says, De Moshe Rabbeinu Shemalach Be'eretz Kush Arba'im Shana.
It's not the book Divrei Hayamim.
No?
No, it's
the history books?
History books.
Okay.
Sorry.
If you look in the, if you really want to know the stories, look in, like when Moshe runs away, you'll read the Yalkut Me'am Lois, especially if you have it in English. Some of you might have it in English. No, the Me'am Lois, the English one.
Oh, the Asher one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's long, I mean, if you have it, it's like crazy stories about Moshe and the land of, the King Moshe and the land of Kush. You ever heard of these stories? Oh, wow, he goes, and how does he become the king? Because they're surrounded on three sides, and Moshe, like, figures out this way in order to conquer the country. You know, he becomes the king, and they make him the king, and then he runs away. Like, also understand, like, as much as we know of Moshe, we know him up to the age of 20, right? He grows up in the house of Paro, and then when do we meet him next?
He's
80. What happened to the bulk of his life? You know, just 60 years gone. I don't know. This is a pretty important person. Wouldn't you think, you know, it'd be worthwhile to know? So the Midrashic tried to fill in these pictures of who he was. He was the king of Cush. He ruled. They loved him. And he ran away. It's unclear why he ran away. Anyway, so he was there for 40 years. V'lakach malka achat. And he took a princess there. V'lo shachabi ma kamosha katuv sham. And it says there that he never lay with her. I mean, she was a princess in name only. Okay? V'heim lo yadu. They didn't know that he never really married her in the biblical sense. You're learning some new things about Moshe that okay, this Isha Kushit, then he had this other wife. Now it's just very interesting that the whole broad topic of this section is what we'd say is Lashon Hara. You know what I'm saying? Like, and all of a sudden in the section of Lashon Hara about Moshe, that somebody spoke Lashon Hara. What do we learn about Moshe? All kind of salacious things about his personal life, you know. Oh, he had his other wife, but we didn't know, you know. Like, and I think that's a very interesting Musar Haskel about Lashon Hara. That when, as soon as you start to talk about Lashon Hara, it just brings up Lashon Hara. Like there's no way to avoid it. Oh, we shouldn't say this. Oh, I shouldn't talk about that. That when you talk about other people, then their privacy is gone. Their personal life is gone. And I think that's something, I read this whole section in a very different way than a lot than other people. I think there's a lot of interesting sort of tragic things about Moshe here. Okay, we're still on the first pasuk. So there's this isha kushi. She was tipora, or she was his other isha, right? There's something also, there's a linguistic thing that's interesting about this pasuk that's unusual. Okay, there's a language thing in the text. Anybody see it? I'll just throw it out to you. If anybody saw it, yes. If not, not. Okay, I know you saw it. Okay, it says, Vatidaber Miriam ve'Aharon. Who spoke? No.
Both.
What should the verb be? Vayidabru Miriam ve'Aharon. Except who gets blamed? Miriam. So then the question becomes, the Midrashim will address, why is it Vatidaber? Also, what do we know happens at the end?
She gets Sarat.
Right, she's the one that gets Sarat, and Aharon does not. Okay, which gives one the sense that she's the...
That you're allowed to listen to it. You're not allowed to say it.
You're allowed to listen to it?
Nothing happens to him. What happens to him?
Okay, all right. I mean...
Maybe he wasn't Makaba.
Not Makaba.
maybe
that's true. No.
You're not allowed to believe it, but you don't get punished.
If you hear it. Right, it's hard to...
Hearing. So you obviously didn't...
One gets the sense that it wasn't this sort of like, she said to him, hey, Aharon, I want to talk to you about Moshe. And he said, I don't want to talk about it. You know what I'm saying? One gets the sense, Vatidaber Miriam v'Aharon v'Moshe al Odo. Let's look at the next pasuk. Pasuk Bet. Vayomru. They said...
They both spoke.
Right. They spoke. Harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem. Halo gambanu diber, right? Vayishma Hashem.
That's where God the Rashi fits in better.
Which one?
The Rashi fits in better. Did you do the divorcing Rashi?
Oh no, we didn't get to that yet. Right? What are they? We didn't say what they said. What are they trying to talk about? You asked. It's okay. And you asked the question. Why now? The why now, putting it in context, is a very important discussion. Like, why all of a sudden did this come up right now? Why is the Torah telling us about this discussion? So what did they say? What did they say about the Isha Kushi? Did anybody know about this Isha Kushi? What happened?
Well, the classic Rashi is that, you know, how come he left his wife and
Miriam? Right. All of a sudden, but isn't it strange all of a sudden? Let's look at Rashi for a second, okay? Vatidaber Miriam v'Aharon says, look at the second Rashi in Pasuk Aleph. Vatidaber Miriam v'Aharon. Okay, so Rashi also, it's so interesting to note that Rashi is focusing on this question of why does it say Vatidaber? Says Rashi, He patcha b'dibor tchila. She started. Why does it say Vatidaber? Because she started. Lefikach ikdima hakatuv tchila. Therefore, that's why she is like sort of blamed. That's why she comes first. So it's just interesting to note that the Rashi is not making it up. It's not a story, but Rashi is answering a linguistic question on the text. Why does it say Vatidaber instead of Vayidabru? Uminayin hayta yodat Miriam shepiresh Moshe min haisha. So how did she know? Like, how did she know that Moshe and Tzipora were no longer living together as husband and wife? Rabbi Natan Omer. Rabbi Natan says, so let's just give a background, and for those of you who are not aware, we know the story of Bahalotcha until now, the tragic part, the second part is, the Jewish people, they start complaining. What do they complain about? What don't they have?
Meat.
This, tell your husband, this is not very good for him, this parsha.
You know, he finds ways.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he will point them out to me.
In
show.
The slav,
yeah. You know what he'll say, of course they weren't supposed to eat slav, they were supposed to eat right, exactly.
All about living.
Exactly. Okay. So they complain about the slav, and Moshe Rabbeinu just like loses it. Like, you know, here we're giving you this man, and it's like this, you know, supernatural food, and he says to Hashem, like, where am I supposed to get meat from? It's a very, very challenging, very interesting parsha that we're not discussing today. He says, you know, he says to Hashem, just kill me. Like, I can't take this anymore. Like, did I give birth to these people that I'm supposed to carry them like a mother carries a child? Very graphic language. Oh, just Derech Agav, I will send this out. There's a wonderful, powerful shir from Rabbi Soloveitchik on Bahalotcha, if you've never heard it. He gave it once in a Motzei Shabbat. I try to listen to it almost yearly, this shir from the Rav on Bahalotcha. And you can get it online, I'll share the link. It's just so worthwhile just to hear, get a sense of the Rav. It's it's insightful and powerful and also deeply personal. Just deeply, deeply personal. And it's very, very moving shiur. And I recommend it highly. So if you're sitting around or... Well, nobody sits around here. If you're, I don't know, making challah, and you can put on your food, or you know, you can put a shir on while you're doing whatever you're doing. It's really, really strongly recommended. I'll send it out. Okay, so he's complaining, and Hashem says, okay, you can't do it on your own. No problem. Take 70 men, you know, get 70 ish, right? And when I give Ruach HaKodesh to you, I'll spread it from you onto the rest of the people. Symbolically, that Moshe wouldn't have to lead the people by himself, that he's sharing the load, sharing the burden. So it goes on 70 people. They have this nevuah for a brief moment. But as we know, there are two other guys who remain in Mitnabim, and their names are Eldad and Medad. And this, you know, they come back and say, Eldad and Medad, Mitnabim and Machaneh. That's the nutshell, the broad story. Okay? Says Rashi. What happened? Minayin hayta yodat Miriam shepiryash Moshe min hayishah? Did he know? Rabbi Natan Omer. Miriam hayta betzad tzipora b'shash ve'amar le-Moshe Eldad u'medad b'nabim b'machaneh. Right? Moshe, the guy comes up and says, Moshe! Eldad and Medad b'nabim b'machaneh. Eldad and Medad are still getting nevuah. Terrible! Stop them! You know, you gotta stop this from happening. They're threatening your leadership. Kevan sheshamat zipara, it was a zipara when she heard this, Amra, she said, Oy l'neshoteim shel elu imhim nizkakim l'nevuah. She said, Zipporah stayed standing, she said, Oy, I don't feel bad for them. Who do I feel bad for? Their wives. Right. Poor wives of these Eldad and Medad, if they get nevuah. Sheyiyu porshim l'neshoteim, gedera shepiresh ba'ali mimeni. Because if they have nevuah, like I have nevuah, like Moshe has nevuah, then their wives will never see their husbands again. It's a very interesting, very real, personal reflection of, like, you know, this response to these external events, and I find it very, very sort of honest and moving in a sense that here Eldad and Medad, Nabi b'Machaneh, and according to Rashi, like Tzipora looks at it and says, well, their personal lives are over. You know, it goes to for me when I read this, to the point of, like, we don't think of Moshe as a personal person. We don't think of him as a person who has a life. And the reason, what?
He has the property of Am Yisrael.
Right, he becomes the property of Am Yisrael. And, you know, I don't have this year, and it's a very interesting sort of juxtaposition of last year and this year, as you know. And it was always a very strong issue for people in leadership that the more you get involved in the community and leadership and such, the lower your threshold of personal life goes. Right? And what does that mean?
Yeah. This year you see your husband.
It's not the scene.
It's not seeing my husband. It's like I saw him last year because his schedule is very flexible. It's an issue of every aspect of your life. Personal life being everybody else's business.
Yeah, so. It's an issue of having a personal life. The more public you are, the less right you have to have a real life, to have a personal life. Because every part of your life becomes entrenched in everyone else's. So Moshe, as we say, was the ultimate leader. So his life was so entwined with the people that he literally had no personal life. But so Tzipporah heard, oh, these guys are going to become Nevi'im, and she's like, oh God.
But he also had moved his tent outside of the Machaneh after he came down from Har Sinai. It wasn't only that he was...
He did shine his face. Right,
because of his... It's more, I think my understanding of this Rashi is more in terms of his relationship with Hashem than his relationship as a public leader. That because of the level of Nevuah that he has attained, which is why this Rashi fits in so well with these Psukim, because it lets you see it as a unit and it connects them one to the other, because it's talking about his relationship to Hashem, that they had a problem with the fact that, what, is Moshe holier than we are? Like, he talks to God, we talk to God, how come he has to separate from his wife and we aren't separated from his wife? What puts him on a higher level? And Hashem's answer is, lo kein abdi Moshe.
Okay.
It's not what you think.
I think that, I totally agree with you, I think that's beautiful. And that's why this section is so powerful, because there's so much to talk about. We're going to get to the Moshe side in a second. What I find interesting is, why are they talking about him? Who cares? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? This goes to my point of him having... You're right. It's really about Moshe and Hashem. But more interesting to me is, if they're talking about him, who else is talking about him?
Everybody. But I was actually, when you just said that, I thought, maybe they're saying, well, are we supposed to be doing the same things? In other words, you could take it as like a positive thing, like, oh, my Rav is only doing X, should I also be doing X?
You get that from the Pasuk?
Where from the Pasuk?
Harak ach b'moshe diber Hashem, halo gam bani diber Hashem.
It sounds like Miriam.
It doesn't sound like she's saying, oh, I see my brother is doing such a wonderful thing, maybe I should do it. Like, does God only speak to him? God speaks to us too. But and talking in the context of a wife. But this is interesting, why are they talking about him? What's the answer why they're talking about him?
They're jealous.
It
sounds like they're jealous.
Okay.
No, but it's Miriam. She.
I think, by the way, yes, it's positive. I don't think it's jealous necessarily. I think it's like, why is maybe Moshe's going too far? They're concerned. You know what I'm saying? They're worried about her. I want to believe that as brother and sister, that it's not petty jealousy, and you're talking about Moshe, you're talking about Miriam and Aaron. You're not talking about, you know, you and I, just anybody. And it is a level of concern. But it's just very interesting. It's a level of a concern about his personal life. Like, they're really invading in his very personal space, his private life, a decision that he clearly made on his own. Like, why are you talking about this? And that's what I mean when I talk about this, like, level of fishbowliness. You know, people ask me, like, what's the biggest difference, like, what's the hardest part of being a rabbi? It was clearly that. Just this notion that, and it's something that no one can prepare you for, and there's almost no way to shield yourself from it. This notion of always being on and always knowing the people who are looking at you. And saying, you know, like, what are you buying in the grocery store? Or did you say hello?
What are you buying in the grocery store? Oh, what's the rabbi eating this week?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm glad you didn't tell me that one. Yeah, I mean, it's...
What kind of community was it? I mean, I've had many rabbis.
No, people said it not in a nosy way. Chas v'shalom.
Like in the supermarket, if you want.
Right. Oh, what's the rabbi eating for supper?
My favorite story was once we went out. It was like, was
you
it my
said,
birthday?
What are you making?
Yeah.
Was it my birthday?
Anniversary.
It was anniversary. It was my birthday, anniversary, or whatever. And I wanted to see Spider-Man, so you can see how many years ago this was. I wanted to see Spider-Man. Yeah. We made it like, you know, 8 weeks after it came out, and it was like a Sunday night. Long time after it came in. We went out to dinner. We went to some like theater. Walk into the theater. Four people are sitting there from the other shul in the community. Hey, Rabbi, how you doing? Good to see you. Am I making it up?
No.
I turned to Rina and I said, there's never anything, it was good muster in a sense, there's never anything I could ever do in this community and think that everybody didn't know about it.
And everybody knew.
They all knew.
And then afterwards they made some kind of comment.
It was like Spider-Man
Spider-Rabbi.
I think it was really interesting that they were more uncomfortable that I was there than I was. But it was just, it was weird. Anyway, so it's just interesting to hear we're talking about Moshe's personal life. And I find it interesting, what I think is very interesting is that the people that you would think that would not talk about his personal life are who?
The people involved in his personal life.
What's that?
Miriam and Aaron.
Yeah. Like everybody else who could understand. Yeah, we're in big trouble. Right. This is what the Midrash says. The Midrash says the following. Well said. Uma Miriam shelo dibra ela be'acheha. Miriam only spoke about her brother. Velo idibra ela shelo b'fanav shel Moshe. She didn't speak in front of him. Ne'en shah. Right? She got punished. Adam hedyao tamadaber devarim bifnei chavero umuvaisho. If you, a regular person who embarrasses other people, alachat kama v'kama she ansho miruba. We're in big trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not. Take a second.
It's
a Targum.
Yeah. It's a Targum.
Okay, so let's move on. It's just a very interesting discussion that it was out of concern. How come he did it? Why is he different?
It's perfectly normal if, you know, siblings go through something that you speak to another sibling out of concern. Although, maybe the family should
Well, she's going to go to him and say, Moshe, I think you should really take your wife back.
Yeah, I think that's the issue.
She
Why didn't she? What?
Help him or, you know.
Maybe she's a.
Maybe what's hard for us is that clearly the Torah's view of what's appropriate to talk about, you know, is very different than ours. No, I'm concerned about my siblings.
Maybe,
you know what I'm saying? Is that our excuse to say, ooh, this is a nice issue to talk about, and that's out of my concern?
Or maybe it's maybe the way they spoke about it.
Is it?
Right. I mean, we tell the one that we think should get married that they should be dating. We tell the one that we think should make Aliyah that they should make Aliyah.
Good.
We tell the one that we're...
And then?
Well, once making
hey, great. But then stop talking about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, what's the point of discussing it, I guess? Either you're going to fix it or you're not. It's very hard for us because, like...
Mm-hmm.
It's juicy. It's juicy. It's great. It's good talking.
I mean,
anyway.
It was the way they were talking about it also, that the tone, that it was derisive.
It was negative. Why? What's different than him than us? Okay, let's go on. Va'ish Moshe anav ma'od mikol ha'adam asher al pnei adamah. A very interesting pasuk. This section capsulizes so many interesting things. In translating literally, it would say that Moshe was the most humble person of all humankind. That's what you think it means, right? But there's something wrong with it. There's a few things that are interesting about it. Okay, what would you say that the text should say if that's what it meant?
Mikol Adam.
Mikol Adam. That word ha'adam, mikol ha'adam. Asher al pnei adamah, right? That are on the face of the earth. What does that mean?
Actually,
what do you do with that?
At that particular time, right. For all time.
Excellent. That's so interesting. So the Midrash talks about both things that you picked up on. One Midrash says that Moshe was more humble than most, than humankind, he said, at his time, but not more than Adam HaRishon, or the Avot.
Or just...
Right? And another Midrash says that Moshe was more humble than all human beings, but not angels. Not Martians, but angels. that's comparing the two. It's a very interesting juxtaposition, but clearly what the Midrash is doing is struggling... Can I turn the air conditioning? Is it like really
it's
muggy?
It's sticky.
Yeah, it's like not hot, but it's... Yeah? Do you mind?
It's nice.
Do you mind?
It's
what, it's okay? You're alright? Okay, fine. Sorry. This Ha'adam is very interesting. One gets the sense when I read it that it says he's more humble than Ha'adam. What is Ha'adam? Mankind or humanity or human beings. Like, what does one get the sense when I read this? What do you get the sense of?
Superhuman.
What?
Superhuman.
Superhuman, right. Very interesting. This raises really, really, really interesting theological questions about Moshe Rabbeinu. What does one do with it? Like, on the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu clearly was what we call a Yelod Isha, born of man. But on the other hand, there were clearly some differences, as we'll call them. And it's very important that Moshe was a human being in the sense, especially theologically. You know, as we all know, comparing other religions to our religion, it's very important for us. But on the other hand, he had to be different. Why did he have to be different? What was unique? Yeah.
What was this before he received?
What, this humility of him? Or, what do you mean?
Yeah. Or was it afterwards? Like, was superhuman?
Well, one gets the sense that he was... Well, it's so interesting, because if you look at the Midrashim on when Moshe was born, there's nothing in the text, but the Midrashim really go out of their way to show you how Moshe was different. You know, by the way, you can give me some examples. He was a... What?
He was a major
pima. He was a major pima. He was born 6 months old.
Three, right.
What else? He was born with the Brit Milah. Excellent. What else? It says that when he tried to shout over the jet planes, he had a glow. Not only did he glow, the whole house glowed. Thank God, the baby should be healthy at all, but I don't think the house lights up, you know. And correct. But what did Midrashim trying to do? What do you do with this Hanam called Mikol Ha'adam? That word Ha'adam.
I
actually underlined the word Ha'adam because it bothers me.
I'm just saying that usually the support's on the textual support.
100%. Right, there's nothing in the text to say, other than the fact that there's something in the text that it's not really in the text either.
Although the Midrash will take a word and build on it.
Absolutely. But what a Midrash, when I look at Midrash, I'm trying to understand not just like, you know, did the story happen, did the Midrash happen or not? I'm trying to understand what are the Chazal who are writing, who are authoring these midrashim trying to do for me? What kind of image are they trying to give me? What kind of picture are they trying to fill in for me? You know, and Chazal had this struggle, because on the one hand, Moshe is a human being. But on the other hand, we call it Torat Moshe. Right? Moshe is different than any other human being before or after him in history, in that the Torah came from him. Right? How do we know, like, if he's a guy like any other guy, and this is an issue obviously always, but you know, especially contemporarily, if Moshe wrote the book, so it's, I mean, he wrote a book, I write a book, we're all human beings, aren't we? So what do you have to do in order to resolve that issue? Correct. Say, well, he's not you. He's different than you. You
but
and he are...
He was born for that particular task. He was chosen. Even when he refused it, he was...
He was chosen for that task. He was taken for that task.
Whereas
he...
other people grew to their own greatness, he was designated for that task.
So you mean he was fundamentally different, born differently?
I think so.
So then he wasn't human.
He was human
with
a different aspect.
Okay, but what you just said is that he's not like everybody else, that there's something different. Okay.
He was a flesh and blood, perhaps. He was a flesh and blood, as we know humans to be, functioned as a human being.
Okay.
But he had special
element. Something more. Right, but I'm saying that's exactly right. This is what Chazal are dealing with. That, and that's what this issue really goes to. Miriam and Aaron say, well, he's a human being and we're a human being. And the Torah comes along and says, well... Not really. He was anav mikol ha'adam asher al pnei adamah. He was more... What does anav mean? Well, the reason you say anav is humble is because you've been taught your whole life that anav means humble. You know what I'm saying?
Does anav appear elsewhere in the Torah other than referring to
not really. Does he? Does it?
The word anav?
Rashi says anav means shafel v'savlan.
I like the savlan.
All right. Shafel, low. Savlan means sebel. Savlan... Savlanut, we translate especially. What's savlan?
Tolerant.
Tolerant. Savlan, it means tolerant. Mm-hmm.
What is sevel?
Suffering.
Savlan
sufferer. Right, you are.
What's that?
If you tolerate, you sometimes have to suffer.
No, it's true.
Right, it's interesting. We translate that as humble. But low and... Suffering is a very interesting description.
But how do you know that savlan here means suffering and not tolerant?
You want to say tolerant? Okay, what does that say about him, that he was the most tolerant person, more than all of humanity?
It means that he accepted each and every person, and that he, as the leader of the nation, you know, that's why everyone came to him with their problems, and... You have to be very tolerant to be able to understand the problems of each person.
Good. And in this context, why is this relevant?
Is tolerance of motion, you know, Miriam and Aaron talking about?
Did he know about it?
Afterwards he did.
Well, only because God told him afterwards. Well, it's a good question. There's a big machloket. There's a big machloket between Mefarshim whether they were speaking in front of Moshe or not in front of Moshe. Like you said, they were worried about Moshe, so they came to him, they had an intervention. You know, according to some Mefarshim, they spoke in front of Moshe, and so then according to that interpretation, Moshe was anav ma'od mikol adam, he just took it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Is this an answer to our...
So here's the problem with this pasuk. Either this pasuk is an answer to why Moshe didn't say anything, I mean the little local story, or is this pasuk an address to the larger issue? Do you understand what I'm saying? Meaning he's saying, Moshe and Aaron spoke about Miriam, Moshe and Miriam, Aaron and Miriam spoke about Moshe, and Moshe didn't answer because he was an anav. Or, you could say, Moshe, Miriam and Aaron spoke and said, why is Moshe different than us? And the Torah steps back and says,
By the way,
you should know, good, Ish Moshe anav ma'od. But then anav has to be something huge. Mm-hmm. Something fundamentally different. Is anava sort of a, I would say, and I think there might be something to this, it goes back to the beginning of our discussion, a sort of superhuman quality to it. When you're asked to be an anav, right, in a sense, what are you asking to do? Like, we all have this nitiyah, this need to be recognized, to be acknowledged. In a sense, one of our most human qualities is our desire to judge ourselves, how?
Based on other people.
Right, based on how everybody looks at us. Right. Someone who's an anav, is if you are the biggest anav in the world, you don't have any sense of what other people think about you, and you don't care.
But there's a fine line then between, or maybe there's common ground between Anahnav and confidence.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and then super confidence, like arrogance. But there's a...
Well, okay, arrogance.
No, but I mean...
Arrogance means I do what I do, and irrespective of how what I do affects you.
Or I don't care what you think about what I do.
Is that arrogant? I don't care what you think about what I do if I do the right thing? That's not something that's arrogant.
Okay. I don't think arrogance is how it affects
but
you.
But isn't it about like confidence or something? Let's say two people have an argument.
Yeah.
And you really believe that you're right. Isn't it about to still go and say, I'm sorry, and I... You know, and everything like that. Isn't that an act of humility to say, to sit there and think, is there something that maybe, even though I think I'm right, I may have done wrong? Isn't that humility? Isn't that what humility is?
I think it's a positive trait. I don't know if I would define that as humility. Humility,
because someone who doesn't have humility will say, I am right no matter what, I did the right thing, and everyone else, as you say, I don't care what... anyone else says. Someone who has humility takes a step back and says, you know what, even if I believe that I'm right, I'm still going to...
It's a negation of self.
A negation of self. Okay, but that... I think you're mixing certain things. You know what I'm saying? I think that humility is a quality in that discussion, but that's more like a question of all very important qualities, like, and I understand what you're saying.
As a leader, why do I say that? Because as a leader... That's the key to humility, because here are two people talking about you, and you're not going to go back and go against them and say, hey, you know, like you've obviously done something to affront me. But humility is saying...
Okay, good. So you're interpreting the Anav as a local in this story. Mm-hmm. That's fine, and I think that's legitimate and absolutely true. But what I'm asking is the Anava a super quality? Like we always describe, isn't it interesting, of all the qualities that God describes, that the Torah describes Moshe as... Right. This is the only one. Didn't say he's the smartest. Didn't say he's the only one that says that he's different than anybody else in is Anava. So that to me, it says to me, there's got to be something about this quality of Anava that asks us to take ourselves, you know, that a human being, that if we're saying like superhuman, but not really superhuman, human beings, they have this quality of Ga'ava. Right? I need to be somebody. I need people to think of me in a certain way. Right, and our desire to overcome that, right, is our conquering of that human quality, that, you know, spirituality over human quality. And someone who's totally spiritual, the more spiritual you are, the more connected to the Ribono Shel Olam you are, the less you have that human need of judging yourself based on how people see you, of approval of others, in a sense. You have that sense of self-worth and self-confidence that comes from a knowing that you're connected to Ribono Shel Olam. You have something to say?
I was going to say, that would be a human quality, another, because it's something that we as humans are supposed to aspire to. And Hashem would put a stumbling block in front of us and expect us to aspire to something which is beyond our grasp.
And it says beyond. That's spiritual. Anava is a spiritual desire, is a spiritual midah. Right, like any kind of spiritual midah, your body is an impediment to all kinds of spiritual midot. Right? Tzimtzum, ruchniyut, connecting to Hashem. Everything about our physical selves is an impediment to our spiritual selves. Right? That's the struggle of human life. So, but if anava would be a spiritual quality, it's a spiritual quality. If Moshe Rabbeinu was total anava, then it's almost like a superhuman spiritual quality, a negation of the self, a negation of his humanity in a sense. He didn't have a self. You don't think so?
No, I'm commenting on the quality of my homework.
Oh.
That's not me,
though. The one I was wondering is... Let me just finish it. You'll say it again. The reason I bring this up is because when Hashem comes down and starts screaming at them, he starts talking about the reason, the ways of Moshe is different. And that's why I think that there's so much more in this story than just, you know, a local story about Moshe and his brother and his sister. Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm generally not trying not to pull in like current, you know, politics and events and things, but I think
current politics.
I think maybe it's sort of paints a picture in the context of non-Americans. But in American politics lately, you've had like Elliot Spitzer and Bill Clinton, people who are in positions of you know, tremendous control and power in terms of government and law, mm-hmm. and they ended up doing things that were quite immoral.
Right.
Right?
So, and people have said, oh, you know what happens when you get into a position of power? You sort of think that you're above it. And I think that's sort of what the I Love may be pointing to, saying that, you know, Moshe was not above, not that he wasn't above it, but he always recognized that he wasn't, maybe he was able to control the nation, but he still had that sort of that humility of, I'm not greater than all of you in terms of, you know, being able to go outside the bounds of morality. That's sort of what I was wondering, whether there's sort of that connection.
You mean with his wife in the local sense?
Although, in fact, he did the opposite. If rapid. Talking.
That he separated from Tzipora.
Yes.
Right.
But sort of, that's
so
sort of,
he went to the other extreme.
Right. But that sort of makes the point. That he didn't say, you know what, I'm up there, I'm in with God.
I'm
exactly the same that way. Yeah. You know, it's saying like, I can just go ahead and do whatever I want. And saying, no. You know what, I still have a strong sense. And that's sort of like maybe what, I don't know, that I was sort of looking at as enough.
Uh-huh.
And there's sort of the other interesting thing about it is that it could just say the Moshe Anav Ma'od, but it says Ha'ish Moshe, and it says, you know, that it still says...
Yeah, Ma'od, very good, very nice.
Says, you know,
he was an Ish, but he was Anav Ma'od.
Or not only that, it says Al Pnei Adam, he was superhuman, but don't think that he was God. You know, he was
right, but you very well said. There's that we're trying to find this fine line between what is Moshe? Is he a human being? Yes, he's Al Pnei Adam, Ha'ish Moshe, very well said. But... Mikol HaAdam. You know, like, so where does he fit in? He's neither here nor there, in a sense. Like, is he this? Is he that? The answer is no. And like, it's sort of this, you know, there's this godly place for him. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Hold on a second. I just want to say a couple more Anav. Listen to this. Said the Midrash. Davar Acher. What does Anav Ma'od mean? Milashon Oneh. There's a Midrash you never heard, probably. Meaning a retort, an answer. Kolomar. Im haya Moshe shomea elu dvarim, yodeh haya la'anot ulhashiv ta'anot kinegdan. He always had, he had the answer always at the ready. Ish Moshe Anav Ma'od, he had a retort ready for anything. You never thought of that as Anav, did you? That's like not the Anav that we think about, Anav. But I just wanted to...
He never said, I should have said.
He never, he's like, oh, I wish I had said that. You know? But he never thought of Anav as, and what I wanted to point out, just in the Midrash is, we look at Anav with like 2,000 years of subsequent definitions. Sometimes you have to look at the word and say, well, what does the Torah mean when it said it? It's like a long time ago. You know, it's not clear.
Yeah, but that's what's such a big deal about that? That's not something to inspire.
That he could have answered them. He had an answer for them right there. He's right there with them. And they say, Moshe, and he's like, what we mean? That's
in tune with the truth.
Oh, you mean what's so great about that? I don't know. It's a good question. It's a good question.
But that also points to his being more than human, in a way.
Yeah,
that he always had a good answer?
No, that he always had the rash on
that. Right.
Okay, I could go on, but I think I'm going to stop here.
Okay, let's talk about Turin.
What's that?
The gematria of Eden, Shinochel Gan Eden.
Wait, which is gematria of Gan Eden?
Anav.
Anav is, okay. I guess that we will stop here. This quality, right, I think this fits in very well. The quality of Anava, I started by saying it doesn't really, it's not something that we value today, this quality of humility of, on the one hand, having that really strong sense of self-worth, of knowing where you are. And it does fit in a sense that, like, I just wanted to throw in the end, like Moshe Rabbeinu, like everybody's looking at him, and I think that when I read this, I see Hashem looking at Aaron and Miriam and saying, like, at the very least, you would expect that his brother and his sister would be the only two people in the world that wouldn't talk about him. You know what I'm saying? And and that would at least give him the personal space or protection or confidence to say, you know, he's doing the right thing. And like one gets a sense, like Lokein Avdi Moshe, you think that you're different, but Moshe, like, he doesn't have any life, and you should have given him that benefit of the doubt, in a sense. And it goes back to this notion of, like, in these opposites in the world that we live in a world with, on the one hand, no sense of boundaries, no sense of privacy whatsoever, and on the other hand, a sense of the anava is not only bad, it's counterproductive. That if you stay to yourself and you're not public and you're not well known, then you're really not a person of value. That the only value is in how many people are aware of you and how many people know of you. And it's just
friends.
What? Exactly.
It's
yeah, that's the beginning. Yeah, and it's so. Yeah, but how many people? I mean, really, they just bring up how many people judge themselves by? Oh, you got 372 friends.
My friend,
must really be important.
My friend works in NSN, and she said that like.
Thanks.
It's a whole thing.
Right, how many friends you have?
And I'm not friends, I am friends, and these are girls who have, like, problems.
Well, they all have problems because we've taught or we've learned or society's taught us that we judge ourselves based on how everybody else judges us. Whereas the actual real goal is to try to overcome that and to try to achieve this level of anavar where you say, you know, I want to have friends, of course, friends are good, but I don't judge myself on either who my friends are or how many I have. That I judge myself on the level of the relationship, the self-confidence that I have, that I know that my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good. All right, we'll stop there.